Hello, this is Marley. Welcome to my show. This show is called Makeup Microplastics with Marley. That's a bit of a broad name, but what I mean by makeup is, of course, the makeup industry, skincare, other things like sunscreen, for example. My show is going to be more of a short series, in which could extend into a longer one. But this is the first, so welcome. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm super excited for this show because I'm secretly a nerd when it comes to science, makeup, skincare. I just love it so much. It is like chemistry. I mean, it's literally chemistry. And I love makeup and skincare because that's just the way I express myself. Makeup is actually a necessity for me because it is just integral to my artistic expression. So that's why I feel that's one reason why I feel so passionate about this topic is because for some people, makeup is a livelihood. It's a way to show the world who you are, just like clothing. And we have to respect these industries that are built around self-expression. And for, like I said, for some people, these forms of self-expression are vital, but it's tricky because the industries that they come from take advantage of that kind of empathy and necessity from people, the everyday citizen. And they profit off of self-expression. That sounds a bit conceptual, but I'll definitely go into that a bit more later. But yeah, that's a bit about this show is kind of the interplay between science and makeup and emotion and reason, and moreover, kind of the overarching theme of questionable sustainability, greenwashing, and exploring the truth of what is really in our products. So I hope you enjoy this as much as I enjoy this topic. I'm so excited. Yeah, so let's get started. I wanted to do a little bit more of an introduction. So like I said, my name is Marley. I'm 25 now. I'm from New York City, but currently I'm living in Dublin, so this is a bit of an international feature. Yeah, and I feel like growing up in New York, you know, you get to know people based on what they look like, who they are, where they come from. And the subculture, you know, that's like super present in the city. And I feel like I grew up so blessed to be surrounded by different people, especially growing up in Chelsea, which is a super queer neighborhood. So from the jump, I was taught self-expression is necessary for happiness, and it is a source of strength and a source of liberation to just be who you are, no reserves, no reservations. And makeup is a part of that. Like, I grew up with drag queens, like just walking down the street every day. So that is a big part of my life. And, you know, when I was in high school, makeup for me was just like wearing eyeliner, and kind of doing like the typical beat, the typical face. A big part of makeup can be camouflaging. So feeling like you're assimilating into a group, like popularity, for example. That's definitely how I felt. That's my relationship with makeup until I was about maybe 17 is when I started to explore more. And it's actually interesting, again, how that's tied to the queer community because whenever it was Pride, I would always do my makeup super fun and I just enjoyed it so much. And I kind of like took that holiday and that expression into just my everyday because it just made me so happy. So, yeah, I think that's kind of where my love for makeup originated, was kind of learning who I was, why, my place in the world, what I wanted to do, really developing a sense of self. And by developing a sense of self, I developed a makeup style that was just like not the typical style I would wear on my average day to school. And it was just a really safe exploration. And I feel like that's why it's so essential to human expression because, you know, it's a private way that you get to know who you are, I think, when you just like play with makeup in the mirror. You're discovering different versions of yourself, but also it's a form of art. So, like me, someone like me who is really bad at drawing, who is really bad at painting, the only thing I can do with my hands in that way is makeup. So, yeah, it's a form of self-expression. So that's a bit about my interests. I also have a background in psychology and criminology and sociology. So I'm currently getting my master's right now in comparative social change. So that's why I'm in Ireland. But you'd be surprised that these things all kind of mesh together, you know, especially sociology and psychology, like the social, the psychological impact of makeup, but also like the psychological aspect of consumerism and economics, as well as social change. Like, how can we put pressures on certain industries to change the standard? And that could create a ripple effect, as, like I said, I'll also go into that further. So yeah, that's a bit about me. So what the show is about, like I said, is about kind of how sustainability, the environment, social psychology, consumerism, economics, greenwashing, makeup, skincare, everything like that is just tied together. So in a sense, you cannot disentangle the beauty industry from social movements. Especially climate change is the biggest example. And when I go more specific into like ingredients and specific like chemical compounds, like you'll start to understand why I'm bringing this up. But yeah, it's kind of just going to be a little like personal, selfish nerd out session. So I hope you learn something from this, but I hope you also start to think, start to reflect about your products, what you're buying, why you're buying this, and how these products make you feel. And just like reflecting about your buying decisions, essentially. So yeah, why I'm interested in these subjects is, of course, personal expression, scientific interest, you know, kind of combining like my own education, but you know, I'm somebody who like always watches PBS Space and Time, PBS Eons. Like, I love science. But of course I went more of the social science route. But who knows, you know, this kind of deep diving into makeup has kind of made me think about like law or microplastic research in the future. So who knows what that'll turn into. But also just a general care of the environment. And I'll go into that more, of course, as well. I'm super passionate about the environment, about climate change. You know, I'm vegetarian. I try and eat sustainably and organic when I can. I mean, I'm a student, but I also like come from a place of privilege with like my parents being more middle class, upper middle class. You know, like I know what I can spend money on. So I try and reflect those decisions into my purchasing power. But all these things, again, that kind of like buying psychology is also something I'll talk about later. But yeah, so like I said, all these things are intertwined. What to expect? Like I said, this could be a single episode. This could be a few episodes. It could turn into like a series. So it kind of just depends on the success of this episode and how that goes. But yeah. So why is this important? You know, of course, I mean, like I've already said, the most important thing is the fight for climate justice. Like that is the forefront, I guess, of these episodes. This topic is the fight for climate justice. And within climate justice, you cannot disentangle climate justice from other movements of solidarity, essentially. You to have solidarity with one social movement, you have to have solidarity with another, because climate change is like making it so that there are climate refugees now. You know, all these things are intertwined, and the beauty industry is one of the most powerful markets in the world. Historically has been, you know, like thousands of years ago, people were putting their own forms of makeup on them. It's what we do. It's a self ritual. It's how we take care of ourselves, in a sense. It's how we feel comfortable with ourselves, how we self meditate, you know. But at the same time, it's a huge industry that takes advantage of insecurities, but also takes advantage of self-expression. So it is insanely important, because there's also, if they're producing all these products, they're probably using greenhouse gases or like oils and stuff for that, fossil fuels. So in order to put all these products on the market, there's so much energy and resources that they're using just to power that. But at the same time, everything that you're putting on your face comes from somewhere. And there's always new stuff being pumped out on the market. You know, every freaking celebrity at this point has a makeup brand. So yeah, it's just around us everywhere, all the time, nonstop. But at the same time, I feel like at this point in our society, I feel like more and more people are becoming aware of the entanglement of different social movements. And in response, the makeup industry and skincare industry has kind of tried to subdue us with this greenwashing method. And in turn, they make us believe the onus is now on us to think our choices, aka our purchases, will help change things, obviously, because we live in a capitalist society. So what I mean by that is, when you have greenwashing occurring in an industry, it basically gives you two options. One option is, oh, this is the cheap product, it's probably bad for the environment, less expensive. The second product maybe uses soy ink on the packaging, maybe it has less plastic, it's probably more expensive, it's like fragrance free, like you know what I'm talking about. But they're both products, like they are both being pushed out at the same rate by maybe even the same company. Maybe the same mother company, for example, you know? So it's the illusion of choice. That's what this is. These industries give you an illusion of choice that your purchases make a difference. And of course they do. I mean, we have purchasing power, and that's how maybe those who do not have so much like social power can retaliate by like strikes, like purchasing strikes, for example. Yeah, sorry, that was a little bit of a tangent, but Like I was saying, these companies through greenwashing make us believe that our purchases will change things when really it's just an illusion of choice because both products are being distributed and take as much energy as each other. For example, if I decide to purchase the greenwash product, it psychologically probably makes me feel like I'm a good person. Like, oh, I have the money, I can do it. And that means I'm eco-friendly. I can make a difference if I shift my purchasing power. If I spend more money on something, I should expect quality and care behind the product. I mean, that's like what you would expect. I'm paying more money, it will be a better product. So it kind of manipulates us by believing that we're really making a difference. And through greenwashing, the onus is on the consumer to change their behavior, since it's basically expected that the consumer demands the producer rather than the producer affects the consumer to change. That's kind of like the hidden manipulation that, like, like we want things to be a fairer world. So to subdue us, like I said, a company will give us two options, but really they're kind of the same. And instead of us just changing the standard on the producer side, it's like, okay, now the weight of responsibility is on the consumer to choose between the better or worse product. I mean, the best way to think about this analogy is like the lesser of two evil concept when voting. Like, we always think, oh, okay, we should vote for the lesser of two evils. But it's like, why not just focus that kind of energy on the actual system that makes us believe that that is normal? Like, we are focusing our energy on the wrong type of level, and that's like the producer and the product is like, the producer is like, choose the lesser of two evils, when it's like, the producer, why are you even giving us an option when shit won't change, it's just literal manipulation. And another example is like the plastic versus paper straw debate. So, it was like something so, I mean, yes, we so millions, billions of people use straws, right? But on the grand scheme of pollution, it's not jack compared to the other things that are being released into the environment. But that kind of onus, that responsibility on the consumer, it's like makes you think, Marley, you have to use a paper straw instead of a plastic straw because that one choice will save a turtle. When it's like, why can't the companies that are like creating both these products just make sure that they're saving the turtles? And also now there's just a bunch of paper instead that gets soggy and has dye all over it, Like, it just creates the demand for paper in the same way as plastic. So it's just like shifting the demand into another market, and gives us, again, illusion of choice. Like, these are not entirely renewable resources. I mean, paper is technically, but it's shifting the demand in a different market, based on the consumer rather than us demanding the producer to not do that at all. And it's just extremely frustrating and exhausting because it's like I said, I'm vegetarian. I try to reuse glass jars all the time. I try to buy from, these packaging-free grocery stores, when it's like, why do I need to change every single behavior that I have in order to feel like I'm making a difference? It's like my minute contribution isn't anything compared to what the power that the people I'm buying from have, and they're the ones that need to shift it. So again, in summary, the greenwashing has focused the responsibility on the consumer rather than the producer, and how they're manipulating us to believe their product is the better option through this technique. Again, it's a competition of product rather than just total transparency across the board. And it's really a manipulation of people's emotions, you know? Like, I believe, maybe it's just me, but I believe that people are good people, are born good and having good intentions. And I think most people might want to make a difference in this world, and they think they're doing a good deed. They think they're really making a difference by choosing to buy this neutral colored soap, that's really just the same stuff. And after a while, it just gets incredibly exhausting. What difference does it make if we're not completely overhauling and radicalizing the industry itself rather than our purchases? So that brings us to the main subject, which is greenwashing and makeup and skincare. So a specific example I can give is the Clean at Sephora label. I mean, in theory, it's great. It's like, okay, I know that this product reaches these standards. I'm gonna buy it because it goes through more testing and regulations. I feel more comfortable emotionally to buy it. Again, it's a subduing of our emotions and preying on people's empathy and emotions. So yeah, it offers, according to Sephora, the website, they're saying we offer effective products without certain ingredients. And in their FAQ, they have like the actual list of ingredients. So it's nice that they actually have it all listed out so you can look. But I'll talk about that a little bit more later. So the more obvious things that you guys might know listening to this are ingredients such as parabens, sulfates, phthalates, mineral oils, coal tar, lead, and mercury. So there's a little bit of a distinction here, I want to say. So things like parabens, sulfates, phthalates, that became banned in clean beauty basically because of somewhat unsubstantiated research. I mean, I can't say that entirely, but it has led to kind of mixed research. Like a sulfate is like is basically what's in soap sometimes. Basically, it's like what removes oil from a surface. And people believe that parabens and phthalates are like cancer causers essentially because they think it messes with your hormones and everything. And I mean, okay, I'm glad that there's research being done on this. It's better to have it studied first. Rather than just being in makeup to begin with. And that's kind of the same sentiment that I have with everything else. Like, y'all should not be just putting random stuff in makeup and skincare before y'all even test the environmental impact or the biological impact that it has. And the thing is, the stuff that is being released into the environment through makeup is now biological because we are all consuming it through water and air, water specifically with microplastics. But that's kind of a distinction. And the other things like mineral oils, coal tar, lead, and mercury. I mean, obviously, you don't want lead and mercury and coal tar in your makeup and skincare. But why is that just limited to clean at Sephora? Like something like lead and mercury needs a label to be bought, that should just be the standard, period. So the way I see it is like, why even have a guide when it should just be the basic standard? You're marketing yourself as a conscious company. Like, if you really want that to be the case, then just make it the standard, period. So I feel like it's kind of a scapegoat, to be honest. Like, we're clean at Sephora. We don't put mercury in these products. And that just is like, okay, so the rest of the products that don't have this label have lead and mercury in them? I mean, probably not, but people are not testing this stuff right, like for a long time before it comes out, and for scientific papers to be published in a journal, like it needs a lot of time. It needs oh my God, I can't say this word. You need to be able to replicate it in another setting. So it takes a long time to study the impact of ingredients in makeup and skincare and just chemicals in general. And the market doesn't have time for that. You know, they're like hopping on the next trend. They don't have time to study the environmental impact. And the only test that you ever see done by these makeup companies and skincare companies are often in-house tests. So kind of studying like the clinical efficacy of the ingredient on actual skin. I mean, some of them do use third-party researchers to test that on people, but that's just like the efficacy of the actual skincare ingredient, not like the environmental impact that these chemical compounds have on water or animals, for example. And especially because, like I said, the market demand is like so fast and never slowing down, you will not be able to test the effects of one makeup product on water over the course of 10 years. You know what I mean? Like that, these tests on the makeup and skincare impact will be done in retrospect, which is so dangerous. Because you're just waiting, like they don't care. So that's why I just don't see this label as effective. And moreover, I don't see it as effective because there's a difference in their qualifications between prohibited and restricted, which I'll get into later. So like I was saying, obviously this stuff should be banned. Obviously, this should just be the basic standard across the board. Yes, you need time to study some of this stuff, but on the other hand, things like lead and mercury, which we all know are poisonous to us, that should just be the basic standard. Another reason why this is an important topic with in terms of climate justice is because a lot of these ingredients are mined, especially things like carbon black that comes from the environment. So these things that you're putting on your face, they come from somewhere. It comes from the earth, or it's synthetic in the made in a lab, which is okay. Like synthetic compounds are safe sometimes. So I don't want to like completely say that all chemicals are bad. That's just not true whatsoever. And I'm a skincare junkie, so I know these things. I know the difference between like a safe chemical and a bad chemical, but I feel like greenwashing has kind of like turned that word chemical into a negative. And yeah, so it's a lot. It's exhaustive. And I feel like once you start to go down this path of exploration, you just feel suffocated because you feel like it's all around you, it's in everything, and there's no escape because you think you have two options: the expensive product, which is considered clean at Sephora, or the unclean product, which could have freaking lead in it. But either way, even when the stuff is restricted by clean at Sephora, it still has microplastics. So yeah, like I was saying, carbon black is mined from the environment. That's one reason why this stuff is really serious. But at the same time, going back to what I was saying about parabens, sulfates, and phthalates, like that was banned because it was pushed by trends. And that just goes to show that greenwashing is a trend. It's not actually the care of the producer that they are making a difference in this world, that they care about climate justice. It's the fact that they're meeting the demands of the market. So in this sense, the consumer is demanding that this stuff is removed from makeup. Even without full substantial reports being done, like I said, over years and everything like that. Yeah, it just goes to show that they're meeting the demand of the market rather than just like the goodness of their heart. And it shows that brands are willing to take on these labels just to fit into trends that show the consumer that they care, but they don't care about their impact. They care about trends. So again, going back to what I was saying about the difference between restricted and prohibited. So specifically, we're going to be talking about acrylates. You might think you when you hear that word, you might think of like acrylic paint or something. That's kind of like, I wouldn't say the family, but it's like an acrylate. Like these all these things are like somehow chemically related to each other. But acrylates can be a type of thermoplastic. So what I mean by that is like, have you ever had a lip gloss, in which has like a form, a film to it? It's like it feels kind of gel-like, and you're like, oh my God, it doesn't slip, it doesn't, it's not too sticky. I mean, sometimes it can be sticky. But the most obvious way to describe this is like it's like a film former. So if you put on a lip gloss and the color kind of deposits on your lip, but then the gloss stays on top, that's like the acrylate will be in that film. And it's actually really good in a sense as a as its efficacy of what it's trying to do. It's usually like this type of description is usually lip products. It traps water in, which makes your lips not dried out. And that's how I actually started to get into this because I was like researching lip gloss for some reason. Well, actually, I know how it happened is because I was following this account, this makeup brand that's like a clean beauty brand. It's called, oh gosh, what is it called? Mob Beauty, MOB Beauty. And I didn't realize that they were a clean beauty brand. I only knew them because of how insanely cool their color palettes were. Just like the colors that they offered were just amazing. And they collaborated with a lot of like smaller influencers that I follow. So I follow tons of makeup accounts on Instagram because I love makeup, like I said, and I follow a lot of like small makeup artists and influencers in the makeup and skincare field. And I just really thought it was awesome that this makeup brand was collaborating with some small time influencers and even collaborating on products. So that's how I discovered this brand. And then when they were developing a lip gloss and they were talking about the ingredients that they will be and will not be putting into their product. And I was like, why? What is like bad about lip gloss? Because in my head, before getting into all this stuff, I would think, okay, all of these slippery things are probably derived from like oil and like natural oils, because that's what you just think about when you think about skin care, you know, like I'm putting something caring on my body and nourishing on my body. But no, a lot of these things are derived from butane, which is fossil fuels, and microplastics, which gives that film, like I said. So, yeah.